Shauna Marshall is our Democrat of the day. She is running for, I believe it is Senate District. Is it Senate District 22, Shauna?
That's correct. Yep.
That's right. Which is down southeast of the Twin Cities Metro. She's kind enough today to talk about her campaign. Hi, Shauna.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here and talking with you.
My absolute pleasure here. So for everyone out there, let's describe where exactly is Senate District 22?
So Senate District 22 is kind of in the farthest southwest corner of Minnesota. So we have Rock, Nobles, Pipestone, Cottonwood, Jackson, a little bit of Redwood, and some Lincoln and Lyon counties. So it's a pretty big district. It's very rural. But we are in the bottom corner here.
Have you been a lifelong resident down there?
I was not, actually. I grew up in Sioux Falls, and then I've been living in Laverne for about 7 years now. So I am a Minnesota transplant, as I like to say.
Now, you've transplanted out here, and what do you do what's your regular job here?
I am a mental health therapist, so I've been working in kind of the 5-county area, pretty much, which is a lot of the district. Mm-hmm. So what I do right now is I usually would go in home to work with children and families. Right now I'm kind of working out of the office because of COVID complications with going in home.
Well, and it should be mentioned, if you don't mind me asking about this, because obviously your district has been hit hard by coronavirus. As a mental health professional, how are things going down there?
Well, from a mental health standpoint, of course, we're seeing a lot of increased struggles, especially with individuals that are already suffering with depression or anxiety, just the isolation and the worry. It's hitting people hard. In our district, we've definitely had areas that have been hit pretty significantly, especially in Nobles County, where we had the meat processing plant. So there's been a lot of struggles, but we are getting through it. I mean, it's what we do, right? We help each other out and we stand together as a community and we're getting through it.
Well, and all our best out there, because I mean, Nobles, I know, is one of the hardest hit counties so far in the coronavirus tragedy. And once again, it's the impact. You're also seeing this from the healthcare standard, the impact on the healthcare systems,
right?
Let's face it. I mean, healthcare systems across the country have not been prepared for a pandemic, and so there's the strains there as well. So, all my best down there as we all continue to deal with this. What then prompted you to say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to run for Senate District 22?
Well, I got the call that this was an option, that they were needing somebody to run and they were looking at me. And this was not something that I ever had really in my plan to do. But when the opportunity presented itself, I started having some very serious conversations within my life, because I have 2 young sons who just turned 3 and 1. So it was just, okay, can my family handle running a campaign, the long hours and the hard work of that, but also should I win, which I'm definitely trying to do, me serving in St. Paul as a legislator, could my family do that? But as I asked myself that question, I had to say, okay, as a parent, I have a vision for the kind of world, the kind of state, the kind of community that I want my sons to grow up in. And if I don't step up and act when I'm given the opportunity to do so, then I really have no right to then talk about what I want to see happen. So that really was what motivated me initially to step into this, is this is an opportunity to make the changes that I want to see happen in our communities. And then as I've gone with further in the campaign and talked to individuals and groups and even the local town governments, I discovered a lot of people just feeling underrepresented, feeling voiceless. And that's been a big motivating factor for me to continue this, because that's exactly the important thing that I see the state government as being the voice for the people, for the district that you represent.
And Republicans cannot argue that they haven't had time. I mean, Republicans, I mean, your district, like you said, very southwestern part of the state, Pipestone, Worthington, Laverne, also Windham, you know, you're looking at an area here which has been relatively conservative for a while now. And there has been promises and promises and promises. And the fact is that, if you ever want an example of a political party that takes advantage of the people that vote for them, you can look at District 22. You can look at these districts out there where there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in helping out that local district in regards to making sure that there's opportunities there on all levels. I mean, it really has been a failure. You see this in the southern United States as well, where conservative districts, they haven't gotten ahead. They keep voting Republican, but they also don't get any good results from their elections. So changing it up is the only way they have. And you as a DFL candidate, that's a great option.
Right. I think a lot of what we've seen in this district is the representatives that we have, they've been in there for a long time, at, you know, 8 to 12 years at least. And when they run, they can say all the things that they know would benefit the district. They say that. They give that spiel. But then when they're in there and they have the opportunity to make the votes that would count, more often than not, it's towing the party line that wins out.
Of course, yeah.
For example, like my opponent, Bill Weber, he for years has talked about how important the bonding bill is for our district, and it is. But then in this session, as he was given the opportunity to vote on it, he decided to walk out with his party instead of serving what the district needs. It was towing the party line.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs it to change.
Well, and just look at how about another issue? The bill for insulin, the insulin bill out there.
Right.
I mean, don't tell me that there aren't people down in your district that the cost of an EpiPen, the cost of medication, is so overwhelming. They're working 3-4 jobs. They still can't afford it, and yet the lack of concern for the local constituents is just obscene.
It really is. Yeah, and I personally understand, like, we have my older stepson is deathly allergic to certain things, and so we have to have the EpiPens, but yeah, the cost of them is outrageous, so it definitely is a concern.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot within the healthcare system that needs changing.
Mm-hmm.
Being in mental health myself, I see clients who come in and they have $50 copays every week. And they have insurance,
mm-hmm.
but they can't afford those co-pays, and so they don't get the services that they need. And that's something that I would like to write some legislation to expand MnSure or Medicaid to cover some of these things that are falling through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. I should make sure I mention here, of course, obviously, it was insulin with the diabetes bill, but EpiPens, medical care as well. I mean, and we're getting a front row seat for this with the pandemic. The cost of, mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people I've heard that they're getting a bill for just going to get a COVID test. Their employer says, go get one. They go get one and they get a $10,000 bill. I mean, how in the world is that even, who in their right mind is even sending the bill, for goodness sakes? And if we don't have leadership that's going to address these issues, that's going to be a problem there. Shauna Marshall joining us, Senate District 22 Democrat of the day. You, the one thing I like about you, Shauna, is you are not afraid to point to what the problem is. Even though it is a large problem, but it is you've identified it correctly and tried to address that. We need, when it comes to rural districts, we need to completely rethink how the state funds projects, funds the district. We have a failure here that is basically hurting our communities. And whether it's education funding, transportation funding, childcare funding, you know, healthcare funding, the way that it's funded by the state is not, it's not easy to work with, it's not easy to navigate, and it's failing the needs of our rural districts. You've identified, you and I were talking a little bit before coming on the air, talk a little bit about that, because that's the big challenge, but this is definitively the next big fight we're going to have, is the way that we fund things in our state, especially in rural counties.
Oh, definitely. As we enter this next year, we're looking at a $2 million deficit statewide. So there are state funds that are budgeted specifically for the rural communities, such as the local government aid fund. And the rural communities depend on those funds to fund their safety programs, including police departments, to maintain their roads. So these are funds that the local communities depend on, because they don't have the tax revenue themselves, like they do in the cities, to be able to do that themselves. Unfortunately, when we're in a deficit year, those also tend to be the funds that are pulled from first to balance the budget. So that'll be something where we will need that strong voice in the legislature advocating for our rural communities, advocating for keeping the funding going to those communities. Like you said, education is a huge one that completely needs to be restructured. as far as how we're funding it. Because right now it's all based on property taxes. And that creates a horrible system of inequality between the different school districts, and as well as a burden on landowners, because then when we need more money for the schools, their taxes go up. So we really need to restructure that, find a new source of revenue in order to fund education and work toward fully funding it, because we're not doing that. We're not meeting the needs of our educational system. And we do fairly well here in Minnesota. We have a pretty high graduation rate for Caucasian students. We are failing our minority students. Their graduation rates are falling continually. So there is a lot of work we need to do. And I do have some plans for education, and I can give my website later and you can check that out. But childcare is another huge one. These local communities, they don't have the childcare necessary for the citizens who live there to have their kids cared for in town. So, of course, that means they have to leave town. So that means they have to work out of town. So that inhibits the growth that that community is able to have. But as much as the city governments want to promote building childcare facilities, their hands are tied because childcare facilities centers are considered nonprofit, which they're not able to give to. And so some of this needs to be re-legislated. We need legislation to correct some of these issues that are really stifling these rural communities from growth.
And it shouldn't be mentioned here. How about another one? And this is one we can rip Bill Weber for very clearly for. That's the broadband. Republicans love to scream there for broadband. Now, if there is an argument why the state should be expanding broadband to every corner, it's your district. Not only do you have a metro area fairly close to you on the west side that is, you know, you have, of course, a corridor on the southern border there that has a tremendous amount of potential for development. You talked about education. And you talked about medicine. Broadband, we've talked about this a lot, but we have Republicans who have constantly said, keep electing us, we'll put broadband. And the reality is they've just failed, and they have clearly, and this is not by me saying it, this is by their actions, clearly they have no intent on ever following through on a statewide broadband bill. And that's why the DFL needs to get in there.
Right, no intent that we've been able to see any evidence of anyway.
Exactly,
but yes,
yeah.
Broadband is a huge need. And during this COVID crisis, we have seen the need. We've, like, now that we've had to do everything, telehealth for medical service services, for mental health services, for education, we see how necessary broadband is. So in my district, back before school let out in the spring, we had students having to go sit outside the closed down libraries to get their Wi-Fi to do their schoolwork because they didn't have access to it at home. They can't. So that's something we need to change. And we have a lot of the elderly population who really need that access for their telehealth. That's a huge need as well that we've seen.
Yeah, think about that. So, the ability for a medical professional to go to someone's house with good broadband, be able to pull a tablet up and give medical care to someone in their house without having to get them in a car and driving 25, 30 miles or something in that idea. Or the kid, you know, you're talking about the library or having to go to a Caribou that's 20 miles away, a coffee shop that's 20 miles away that has a Wi-Fi password that they can go do their homework at in the middle of the night. It's a failure. And once again, I am tired of Republicans promising this. This is something, and there's not a district in the state that would not benefit from a statewide broadband network. And the Republicans have failed.
The fact is, broadband needs to be made into a public utility.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with it. I can understand the private sector being a little hesitant to laying the cable on that. But then you put it as
still have it in the private sector. We can make like a basic service a public utility, and then if you want above and beyond, that's all private sector.
Exactly.
But we could offer that basic service.
Yeah, and it's similar to how electricity was rolled across the country, is that there you can do this, and it is not only is it potentially a potential money-making opportunity for the state, but that then it would give a basic broadband service to everyone. And tell me a business, school, hospital, senior center, anyone that wouldn't want to have this in your district in 22, Crane Lake up in the northern parts of the state, over in the far southeastern part of the state. I mean, it would be a blessing for most communities.
Right. And as we've seen since March, I mean, we've seen that it is an absolute necessity now. Mm-hmm. It is as necessary as electricity is. It just is.
Yeah, it is. Shauna Marshall. Boy, guys, we need her in St. Paul. I think this is a given. Send District 22. And I'm going to make this is Shauna. Here's the point where I always tell people, all right, help your local DFLer. By all means, help them. But if you're in a relatively safe district, after you've helped your DFLer, help out Shauna Marshall. This is a tough fight. 22, we can win this if we focus on these issues. And if I can make an argument, although I know volunteer opportunities are changing, Pipestone is one of the prettiest places on the planet in fall. It is stunningly gorgeous out there. So road trip down there. Go out, help out if you
can. Visit the monument.
Visit the monument. Go out, make a donation. What is the website if people want to get in touch with you, Shauna?
It's www.shawna4mn.com.
Shauna, S-H-A-W-N-A, the number 4MN.com. I'll link to everything a little bit later on. Shauna Marshall, Democrat of the day, Senate District 22. Shauna, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Thank you for having me, Matt. I appreciate it as well.